Admiral Sir John Jarvis was a stocky man, just turned a spry and still energetic, 60 years of age. Still quite handsome, too, for he had been a lovely youth and had sat to Francis Coates for a remarkable portrait once in his teens. Duty, though, and awesome responsibilities had hunched his shoulders, like some Atlas doomed to carry the earth on his rounded back. Keeping a British fleet in the Mediterranean, such was the task that wore him down now, countering the ever-growing strength of the French Navy, suffering the foolish decisions, or total lack of decisions, of his predecessor, the hapless Admiral Hotham, who had dithered and dallied while the French grew stronger, frittering away priceless advantages in his nail-biting fogs, merely reacting to French move and countermove, or diluting his own strength in pointless patrols or flag visits. Now France was in the ascendant, and he was in the unenviable position of being outnumbered at sea, should the French ever concentrate and come out. There were no allies left in the first coalition possessed of anything even approaching a navy. The Neapolitans' feet had gone quite stone cold after Toulon had fallen in 93 and sat on the sidelines. British troops were still committed to the colonial wars, dying by the regiments of tropical diseases on East and West Indies Islands, where Jarvis himself had held the upper hand. To guard the Gibraltar approaches, he had to send a part of his fleet west, yet French line-of-battle ships still slipped into the Mediterranean from Rochefort, Lorient, and Brest on the Bay of Biscay, fresh from the refit yards, some fresh from the launch ramps. Over 23 sail of the line were at Toulon, that he knew of. French grain convoys from North Africa and the piratical Barbary states had to be hunted down and intercepted. He had to hold a part of his fleet in San Fiorenzo Bay, near the northern tip of Corsica, Cape Corse, just in case the French sallied forth from Toulon. The Barbary states, encouraged by general war, had to be kept under observation before his supply ships and transports proved to be too great a temptation for their corsairs in their swift Zeebeks. Then there were the Austrians. God damn them. They were the only ally left that had a huge army. Even that very moment, they were skirmishing along the Rhine for an invasion of France, and still had enough troops to threaten a second invasion in Savoy, then into the approaches of Toulon. With Toulon, his again, he might breathe easier. That French fleet would be burned, properly, this time, or scattered to fishing villages in penny packets. But the Austrians were not happy with His Majesty's government, nor with the Royal Navy, at present. Late the previous year, General Devin had lost his army. They'd run like terrorized kittens at the very sight of French soldiers, losing him the use of Genoa and the Genoese Riviera as a base. And of course, they'd blamed being run inland and eastward on lack of naval support. Captain Horatio Nelson's small squadron, now much reduced by wear and tear, now blockaded harbours where they had funneled supplies and paid to the Austrians the previous year, plodding off and on that coast, which was now French-occupied and hostile. A valuable duty, aye, Sir John mused most sourly, but not much use in supporting a new Austrian spring offensive. Hands clasped in the small of his back, he stomped the stern gallery of his flagship, the first-rate HMS Victory, taking a welcome few moments of fresh air from his stuffy great cabins, away from the mounds of paperwork, away from the warnings and cautions from London, which charged him to coddle the Austrians no matter what, and keep them in the war, and to maintain sea contact with them so the gold and silver could flow to purchase their allegiance. He heaved a great, round-shouldered sigh and scrubbed at his massy chin in thought, trying to conjure a way in which to remain concentrated for a sea fight, which he was pretty sure he would win should it come. British tars were unequalled, and his own ships, even at bad odds, he was certain, could still outsail, outmaneuver, and outfight the poorly practiced French. He must remain strong, yet fulfill every area that demanded the presence of Royal Navy ships. "Excuse me, Sir John," his harassed flag captain interrupted, "but Captain Charlton has come aboard as you bid and is without." "Ha!" Sir John harrumphed, with very little evidence of pleasure. But then old Jarvie had never been very big on pleasure. "Very good, sir. Send him in."